continuing our conversation on the situation in the Middle East and North Africa, and particularly we were just talking with David Sanger about what we don't know about the incoming Defense Secretary Leon Panetta's position on whether the Pentagon should intervene in places like Libya or perhaps Syria, a place which has had 7 weeks of significant unrest. And it's a situation that's as difficult, if not more difficult, to report on than the situation in Libya. This morning, security forces have put down the largest protest yet in the second largest city of Aleppo in Syria. We want to discuss with our colleague Anthony Shadid, Beirut bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, just what distinguishes Syria in both the demographic terms, military terms, and geographic terms from the unrest that's taking place over in Libya. Anthony Shadid, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
One of the issues that we were just talking with your colleague David Sanger about is how it's not really known what the position of Leon Panetta might be on whether the U.S. should have been involved in the NATO operation in Libya. But senators like Joe Lieberman are beginning to say that Syria is starting to look a lot like the situation in Libya, and that there is an argument growing to possibly intervene in Syria. What is the difference between Libya and Syria, or Egypt and Syria, for that matter, in the difficulties of intervening?
Well, you know, I think in some ways, what are the similarities? I mean, these are countries that are so different in terms of their history, their ideologies, their records, and their relationships with their people. Syria, and I think the Syrian crackdown is far different than the one we even saw Libya's Colonel Muammar Gaddafi undertake. This is a government that still controls its borders. It's still in control of the capital and the second largest city in Syria, and it's one that's engaged in a full-scale crackdown at this point. It's in survival mode, and it has signaled its intention through brute force to try to restore fear across the country. So it's almost hard to see at this point what form intervention would take. That's not to say that the opposition in Syria isn't calling for much more stringent action on the part of the United States and Europe. I think that action would probably constitute sanctions on the president himself, more economic pressure, and also more rhetorical pressure in some respects. You get the sense, and I think it's a sense that is often echoed by the opposition, that the United States and Europe can see a future Syria where President Bashar al-Assad is still in power, however weakened.
And let's talk about the latest reports from Aleppo and other reports that you're getting there in Beirut. Any sign that any of these individual stories might be enough to trigger international sanctions? There was a call yesterday for nations to recall some of their ambassadors or to actually have consultations with the ambassadors to send the message to Bashar Assad to cool it.
You know, I think we're going to see, you know, we'll probably see an escalation in the rhetoric on the part of American and European officials. But I think what's important to remember here is that, and this was said to me in a conversation last week with an American official, the United States is not at the point of transition yet. It's not even sure who it would talk to if it did have the idea of a transition. It's still I think it's still a position on the part of Europe and the United States that they can force a very weakened President Bashar al-Assad to take reforms and even perhaps change strategies that have underlined Syrian policy for years, and those are strategies vis-a-vis Iran, Hezbollah, and Hamas. I think the operative word here on all parties is fear. For the Americans and the Europeans, it's fear of what would follow President Bashar al-Assad. It's the government's intention inside Syria to restore that wall of fear. And I think it's fear on the part of the remaining supporters of the Syrian regime inside Syria of fear of an aftermath, fear of their own security as they look across the border to Iraq and to Lebanon, wondering what would happen if this government did fall.
How much does it complicate the situation that there's no easy pariah like Muammar Gaddafi in the person of Bashar Assad, as bad as things are in Syria, and that there's no obvious military either constituency or individual inside Syria to call who might credibly take over if there was a, you know, Mubarak leaves scenario in Syria, which no one is expecting?
Well, I think the Syrian government has been every bit as ferocious as the Libyan government was in responding to to these protesters. And some of these protesters are armed. There's no question about that. But the overwhelming majority appear not to be armed. So, and it's hard to, you know, I think the crackdown itself is every bit as fierce as we've seen anywhere in the Arab world at this point so far in what we've called the Arab Spring. But I think your point about the opposition is exactly right. And I think it's a frustration that the opposition will voice themselves, that they're not organized enough, that they're not coordinated enough, that it perhaps is still struggling to offer up a vision to Syrians and to the world at large on what a post-Assad Syria would look like. It's just not gotten that far, and they're making efforts to try to hone that message. There's a meeting in Cairo later this month among the Syrian opposition in an attempt to close ranks, but it's still an amorphous opposition. I think this reflects what we've seen in a lot of Arab countries, dictatorships that have done everything they can to wipe out any institutions that would offer an alternative to them. Syria is very much a case of that. It's the Ba'ath Party, it's the rule of the Assad family, and it's the rule of President Bashar al-Assad himself. And there's little alternative to that inside Syria at this point.
And it's also the proximity to Israel. Explain from your view how the fact that Syria is a frontline country with Israel, how does that complicate the idea of intervention or even complicate the idea of change taking place within Syria?
You know, the argument in Syria, and I think one of the few sources of legitimacy or legitimacy that the government itself sees, is that it's a force for what it describes as stability. And I think, oddly, the perception in the region right now is that everyone from Hezbollah to Israel see that as the case, that you know, both allies and opponents see Syria as a force for stability. I think the opposition would argue otherwise. This is decades of dictatorship that have to make way for an alternative. But what the government itself argues is that it's either us or chaos. It's either us or instability. It's either us and perhaps war. And I think that's compelling to some quarters.
Imagine Hezbollah and Israel seeing eye to eye on one thing.
You know, it's no public statements have been made to that respect, but it's definitely the perception in these parts.
Anthony Shadid, Beirut Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times, talking about the situation in Syria and how it differs from Libya and the rest of the Arab Spring. Thank you, Anthony.
My pleasure.